I, Glenn Hauser, welcome you to Canada Media, number 0506, recorded June 28, 2005. COM is our more or less monthly supplement to World of Radio, my weekly program, this edition to be known later as World of Radio Extra Number 60. Canada Media is made possible by Universal Radio for quality amateur and shortwave equipment. For their catalog, phone 1-800-431-3939 or check their website www.universal-radio.com. Universal also provides www.dxing.com, where you'll find lots of useful info, audio of this program, and an archive of our almost daily publication, DX Listening Digest. The half-baked idea of powerline communications, or BPL, continues to crop up here and there. Paul Armani in Denver says, I found this at www.enewsbar.com, a story from broadbandreports.com. Nebraska bans BPL and other Muni options, and ARRL rejoices. This was posted on June 3rd. An interesting crossroads of interest in Nebraska, where state lawmakers have just passed a bill banning agencies, political subdivisions, and public power suppliers from offering broadband or video services to state residents. This bill passed in part thanks to pressure from the ARRL, who rejoice at the fact they won't have to worry about the technology's interference capability for at least another year, at least in Nebraska. More of what the ARRL item says. Nebraska's unicameral legislature has passed a bill supported by telecommunications interests to ban those subdivisions and suppliers and so forth. This would include broadband over power lines. The Unicam approved the measure, LB 645, by a vote of 37-8-4. So, ARRL Nebraska State Government Liaison Bob Mitchell, WB0RJJ, says it's time for rejoicing. BPL is dead in Nebraska for this year. Even if the bill is overturned next year, he believes BPL by then will have been superseded by superior technology that will not pollute the RF environment. And the measure was going to Governor David Heineman for his signature. It was unlikely the governor would veto it. However, in DX Listening Digest, reacting to the entire report, Will Martin says, while it has the positive aspect of banning BPL, note that what it really does is destroy the possibility of municipalities setting up free citywide Wi-Fi internet connections, like Philadelphia is in the process of doing for the whole city, and which I'm hoping St. Louis might do. I've heard that in Philadelphia there was opposition from commercial internet suppliers, of course. It looks like they've done a preemptive strike in Nebraska to stave off the potential erosion or elimination of their businesses by municipal competition. Here in St. Louis, the whole downtown area is now a free-access Wi-Fi zone, but commercially sponsored with some sort of registration required. I'm hoping the whole city could be Wi-Fi'd with free access, especially since we are a fixed boundary city with unchanging city limits, as opposed to other cities that expand their territories over time. Where do we stand insofar as the digital TV transition in the U.S.? The FCC issued a press release on June 9th via BBC Monitoring headlined, FCC modifies TV requirements to accelerate digital transition. The FCC on June 9th denied a request by the Consumer Electronics Association and the Consumer Electronics Retailers Association to delay the date by which 50% of mid-sized TV receivers manufactured and imported must include built-in DTV tuners. To further its efforts to ensure that consumers are able to receive off-the-air digital broadcast television, FCC also moved up the date by which all mid-sized TV sets must include a digital tuner. The rules already provide that all large TV sets, 36-inch and larger, must have built-in DTV tuners by 1 July 2005. Those rules also provide that 50% of mid-sized sets, 25 to 36 inch diagonal, must have DTV tuners by that same date, and that all mid-sized sets must have DTV tuners by the 1st of July 2006. And all receivers with a screen size 13-inch or more, as well as all other TV receiving devices, VCRs, DVDRs, etc., must have DTV tuners by 1 July 2007. The Commission did move up the date for 100% compliance for mid-sized TV receivers from 1 July 2006 to 1 March 2006, the earliest feasible date, according to the industry. And the Commission proposed to move up the date by which all TV receivers with screen size 13 inches or larger and other TV receiving devices, those without a viewing screen, must have DTV tuners from 1 July 2007 to a date no later than 31 December 2006. The statutory target date for the end of the DTV transition and the corresponding end of analog broadcast television transmissions. TV interface devices should be required to meet this timetable. We continue in the digital mode for a while, but a different one. This item, Ubiquiti's Deliberate Deception, appeared in the June issue of FM Media. Nick Lombardi spotted an item in the June issue of Stereophile. Michael Fremer's Analog Corner told this to the Wall Street Journal. An article in that newspaper's lead story said satellite radio offers higher quality sound than FM radio. This is demonstrably incorrect. While satellite radio is digital, it is a highly compressed digital format. Ubiquiti's website, in fact, carefully states that the process offers compact disc-like quality. They are careful not to claim compact disc quality. Calling it compact disc-like is a big, big stretch and deliberate deception, sort of like calling frozen food fresh food-like. It gets the fresh association in, but we're talking about two very different things. As with satellite, so-called HD radio is digital, but all digital formats are not alike. This is not splitting hairs, he says. Please, it is important not to allow these misstatements to stand uncorrected. The public deserves better. Paul Shin wrote this to Radio World. It was quoted in the CGC Communicator via Kevin Redding, ABDX. I would like to extend an open thank you to Clear Channel and AM stations everywhere that opted to reduce their bandwidth. For years, I've struggled with a whole loudness issue with my program directors and managers, competing with many others on the AM band. You see, I'm one of those old-school guys who plays by the rules. The rules say you may not exceed 125% positive peak modulation on the AM broadcast band. I have fought with stations with which I'm entrusted in an effort to keep them legal. All the while, I've been taking much grief from personnel as to why we were not as loud as others. By others, they clearly mean Clear Channel-owned AMs and others that run 150% or more positive peak modulation as a rule. One corporate-owned station in my market borrowed me to install some audio processing equipment. I was told to run the positive peaks to 150%. I refused. This was not a paying job, but a favor to their engineer. The station then sent one of its staff engineers to the site behind me to make the illegal adjustment, saying it was company policy. Keeping my stations legal was way more important to me than some silly program director loudness competition. Today, most of the AM stations in my markets have reduced their bandwidth, except mine. I refuse to diminish the quality of our AM signals. But suddenly, my station sounds so much louder and fuller than our competition. Without breaking any FCC rules, my stations with full 10 kHz bandwidth sound louder and better than the stations that used to be slightly louder than us because of their illegal operation. This has made the station managers pat me on the back for my great work and the improvements to the stations, when in reality I have done nothing. This wonderful twist of fate has even given me an idea. The stations in my market, of which I am not the chief, have reduced their bandwidth, so I'm going to go one step further. I'm going to install the green high-frequency emphasis curve filters in my 9100s, boost the high-end in my 9200 processors, and take advantage of the wide gap in audio quality my fellow stations have created. My life is cake now. I can run legally and satisfy the program director's taste for ultimate loudness over others, and I don't even have to bury our audio deep into the clippers to do it. Feel free to save bandwidth, and I will graciously use it up. The winner will be the listeners and our advertisers. Oh, perhaps I should explain what this is based on. Clear Channel decided that it would reduce the bandwidth of its stations to 5 kHz on AM in order to better accommodate IBAC, or IBAC, in-band adjacent channel digital noise. Another digital mode is DRM, digital radio, or is that Radio Mondial? There was a meeting in early May at the Radio Free Asia headquarters in Washington of the USA DRM group, and a report by Jeff White appeared at the www.usdrm.com website. Thanks to Mike Barraclough for bringing it to our attention. It's very long, but I'll mention a few highlights. Don Messer, currently with the IBB and chairman of DRM's technical committee, talked about some very recent developments. The plan to conduct tests of DRM in Mexico and Brazil. In Mexico, 26 MHz DRM transmissions will be tested by public broadcasters with about 200 watts, stereo and mono, in both 10 and 20 kHz channels, plus single frequency networks. On medium wave, the private broadcasters will be testing DRM, both simulcast and independent. Brazil is not as far ahead with the testing as Mexico, but in Brazil, there will also be tests of traditional shortwave to cover the entire country, either from transmitters inside Brazil or from DRM transmissions via Ecuador, Chile, and or French Guiana. He said success with DRM in Mexico and Brazil could lead to success with DRM in the U.S. Adil Mina of Continental Electronics said that Texas Instruments is developing a DRM chipset, and that shortwave will die without DRM. Analog shortwave transmitter sales are way down. DRM is a savior for shortwave. And he said DRM will give current U.S. shortwave stations tremendous benefits. A plan by Ron Walensky of TCI Antennas would permit a station to cover all of the U.S. in DRM with just 5 shortwave transmitters. Well, I might interject that can already be done, if properly managed, with just 2 shortwave analog transmitters, one to cover the skip zone of the other. Kai Ludwig in Germany forwards some notes on Radio Farda as gathered by Jörg Wagner when visiting the headquarters of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty at Prague. I include it on this program because it is, after all, an American station, even if it's not in America. Radio Farda is produced by some 35 staff members. 8 hours of programming originate from VOA, the remaining 16 hours from RFERL. The editor-in-chief of Radio Farda was available for an interview under a pseudonym only. He says they recently had to abandon a medium-wave frequency, no doubt referring to Kuwait 1593, because Iranian jamming rendered it completely useless. Apparently, they consider shortwave not that important. It says Radio Farda is, unlike VOA, not an official mouthpiece of the U.S. government. They broadcast no official statements. They do make their own decisions on what they broadcast and what not. For example, a 30-second piece from a 2-hour speech they may select. Radio Farda is not obliged to explain to anybody the viewpoints of the U.S. government. Of course, they do that, but they also reflect the viewpoints of the Iranian government. He says, we don't have a political agenda. Audience research in Iran shows a share of 13% to 15% for Radio Farda. The security measures at RFERL are really tight and alarming for visitors. No photography of staff and no photography of equipment. Even the satellite dishes visible from outside. The continuity process of Radio Farda appears quite complex. News originates from Prague, but the music comes out of a feed from Washington, or rather Springfield, Virginia now. Apparently, they don't pot up a fader for this feed, so it seems that the other way around, RFERL sends a feed to Washington Springfield. Technically, the Radio Farda signal is of quite poor quality, he says, with lots of hiss and wild audio level fluctuations during dry talk. You're listening to Continental Media, 0506. Our address, P.O. Box 1684. ENID OK 73702 USA or WORADIO at yahoo.com. BBC Monitoring published an analysis of Bolivia's community media Ready for the Revolution on 14 June, written by Peter Fullerout. Weeks of protests in Bolivia by miners, peasants, and trade unionists demanding the nationalization of their country's rich gas resources and constitutional reform ended after the resignation of President Carlos Mesa and the swearing-in of Eduardo Rodriguez as his temporary successor on 9 June. The caretaker president has said elections will be held within 180 days and has promised to study calls to nationalize the energy sector. The media, both broadcast and internet-based, played a significant role both in mobilizing the protests across South America's poorest country and in bringing details of the issues to an international audience. In recent years, Bolivia's population of 9 megapeople has become more polarized as the Indian majority push for more political representation and a greater share of energy wealth. A dispatch from AP said a broad anti-globalization groundswell that seeks expulsion of multinational energy companies from Bolivia has growing adherence in a country where reserves are second only to Venezuela. In a television sector which is dominated by privately owned channels and where there are almost no presenters who are of indigenous origin like the majority of the population, one TV channel stands out as the exception. Channel 4, with its programs in Spanish and the indigenous language Aymara, appears to be the channel of the voiceless in Bolivia and of those who advocate nationalizing gas, according to a report from Agence France-Presse. As Channel 4 news presenter Consuelo Ponce Medina explained, Channel 4 was created for social action for the most disadvantaged social sectors. Radio, which is an important medium in Bolivia's rural areas, provided the final element in helping to mobilize the street protests. Benjamin Melancon, writing on the Narco News website June 10, said the success of the demonstrations was a product of the efforts of the Bolivian social movements to build a media network that reflects the people's needs. This was epitomized by the Erbol Radio Network, ERBOL, which links a large number of educational broadcasting stations across the country. What kind of a radio network is this that allows people to come on the air to talk about opposing the plans of the powerful with acts of civil disobedience, which in the U.S. is legally defined as terrorism? That was a comment from Mr. Melancon. He concluded that the key to the national effectiveness of radio in Bolivia is that true community stations don't just carry national programs, but also send reports that are carried over national programs. When protests next break out in Bolivia and the protesters have promised to take to the streets unless their demands are met, then the country's community broadcasters and online journalists already have what one analyst termed a revolution-ready media model that most media activists would envy. I should add that there are still quite a few active shortwave stations in Bolivia, and Anker Peterson of DSWCI has also written an article about monitoring Bolivia on shortwave during further disturbances. Speaking of community radio, back to the U.S., Terry Kruger tells us about an interesting station in Dade City, Florida, WDCX on 1610. Now, Dade City is nowhere near Miami-Dade County, I should point out. According to the proprietor, WDCX is a Part 15 low-power station, an alternative news and talk, operating on 1610 from sunrise to sunset in Dade City, providing programming that disappeared on commercial station WDCF 1350 when it was sold to a station in Clearwater. That pretty much destroyed the local community flavor in favor of 24/7 infomercials. Programming on WDCX has political views from varying points of view, from the extreme left to the extreme right, no holds barred. They use a Hamilton Rangemaster transmitter covering much of Dade City and areas toward San Antonio. There are plans to link multiple transmitters to increase the coverage area. Also streams on Live 365. Check the website pascoradio.org/am1610. Terry adds that this station formerly operated on FM 87.9 and 102.9. For a great deal more information about Florida low-power radio stations, visit Terry Kruger's website, home.earthlink.net/tocobagdx/flortis.html. Kevin Redding, ABDX, forwards this article by Corey Deitz, Your Guide to Radio from radio.about.com. Some radio stations don't care about listeners, only demographics. I'm sorry, did you think you were a listener? Not really. Not in the mind of radio station operators. You're a demographic. And if advertisers want to sell products to people of certain age or sex, then there's usually a radio station in your city that caters to those specifics. But if those demographics shrink, and the ad dollars shrink, then the station often changes format with little regard for how many current listeners there are. Who cares? They're not the right demographics. Infinity Broadcasting recently pulled the plug on two of America's premier oldies formatted stations, WCBS-FM New York and WJMK-FM Chicago, and former listeners in both markets are mad. Do you blame them? You devote yourself to a station for years, support it, buy from its advertisers, and what does it get you? A Dear John letter, or in this case a Dear Jack letter, because both have been switched over to the new Jack format, which is gaining ground within the industry. It's commercial radio's answer to iPods and MP3 players. Some radio station owners have decided to put their stations on shuffle mode. I fear there is no more honor left in commercial radio. When a radio station steals away during the night and changes format under clandestine circumstances, we should not be surprised that many angry listeners think they've been musically mugged by jackbooted thugs. Is it any wonder many listeners have turned away from commercial radio in favor of digital devices? iPods never change format on their owners. There is a tribute site to the late WCBS-FM. Artie Bigley forwards it, www.101cbsfm.com. As linked on my monitoring reminders calendar at worldofradio.com, Sundays at 12 to 14 UT, the A&E TV network has Breakfast with the Arts, and they provide a summary of the content of the upcoming show. But as BWTA has evolved, I would say as it's been dumbed down, there is less and less dealing with classical music, ballet, painting, and other media which could be classified as fine arts. More and more popular music angles, etc., which already get plenty of exposure elsewhere. Usually there is maybe one segment which could be classified as fine, but you never know when during the two-hour show. To encourage them to dumb up, I sent this to the host, Elliot Forrest. Not fine, your arts. Dear Mr. Forrest, add one more disappointed viewer that you are covering fine arts less and less on the only show on A&E which used to do so and still should. I hope I don't have to explain the difference between fine arts and what you're doing. At least I can sleep in on Sunday mornings, confident that I am not missing much, but what a pity. I got this reply. I suspect it was automated from the Breakfast team. We are dedicated to celebrating the creativity and joy of expression in the arts, and hope you'll continue with us as we discover the many forms it can take. The show has been evolving over the past few months and will continue to do so as we introduce a new look and a new style of production. Brock Whaley forwards this AP story. Wichita Falls and the media reach agreement about police scanners. More than a month after new encrypted police scanners went silent for the media and public, news organizations have reached an agreement with the city to allow access to the communications. The media outlets had threatened to sue for the same access to real-time police and fire communications they had in the past. By listening to scanners, reporters find out about car accidents, crimes, fires, road closures, and public safety threats. But the new 800 MHz digital radio system requires specific equipment, plus encryption codes for police transmissions for someone to hear the traffic. In the agreement approved, the city will allow TV stations, KFDX and KAUZ, and the Wichita Falls Times Record News, each to buy as many as two digital radios. They'll be programmed to receive dispatching info from the fire department and the police department's primary traffic channel. Mayor Lanham Lyons said, "We feel it's important that the citizens know that it is our sincere desire to have a transparent city government." Wichita Falls officials insisted before that the media and other outside parties should not have access. Officials said officers' safety was at risk if the public knew where police were going. There is a town in Washington State with a radio connection with a really neat name. Enumclaw, I guess that's how you pronounce it, E-N-U-M-C-L-A-W, and whenever I say it, I remind myself and sometimes others that spelled backwards, it's Walkmune. Well, on a whim, I decided to do a Google search on Walkmune to see if anyone else had ever thought of spelling it backwards. And someone has. There is a website I discovered by doing this called Google Mirror, but not mirror in the usual sense. It's E-L-G-O-O-G. You get a Google search results page, but everything is spelled backwards. And it seems someone had actually posted something about Enumclaw to do with NASCAR rather than radio, and it came up as Walkmune. Of course, it found my own postings as well. It seems this was just done for fun. All the letters are in reverse order, but there doesn't seem to be any font available to actually make each letter backwards. Information about it is at another website, easier to remember, www.alltooflat.com. On the NRCAN list, there was a little thread about unusual QSLs, started by Patrick Griffith in Colorado, who got one from KWOA 730 in Worthington, Minnesota. He says it was a partial data sticky note verifying reception stuck to my original report. That prompted Patrick Martin in Seaside, Oregon, who has a multitude of verifications, to say, "You're lucky they didn't write it on toilet paper. I've had things like That's Us on sticky notes, postcards I've enclosed and they sent back, on the outside of the envelope, business cards, or over the report." One Canadian low-power station sent a QSL on the back of an envelope on the customs sticker. Going him one better is Bill Harms. "I have one almost that way from WTYN 1160. It was typed out on a brown paper towel, the kind you can get from a paper towel dispenser in a restroom," and he's illustrated at the website we'll mention in the summary. "The serrations from the dispenser and pink blotches indicating it was near the end of the roll are clearly visible. It is a classic." The propagation outlook from Matt Siddle in Nebraska, WTFDA. Tropo DX should get even better as the Midwest goes into a long period of extended warmth and increasing humidity. The only thing missing, mature corn plants to release even more moisture to help build the natural inversion. That, I'm not making this up, corn plants are responsible for releasing huge amounts of moisture, which is how the Midwest can get stifling humidity so far away from large bodies of water. And moisture air at the surface in the mornings is a natural breeding ground for tropospheric VHF UHF DX. Glenn Hauser concluding, Continent of Media 0506, also known as World of Radio Extra 60.